I really wanted to give Jerry a workout this morning. I said the whole Bible, but he said, maybe not that much. Thank you, Jerry. Good morning. If you have not been with us for this series, let me explain. We're covering Jesus' parables this quarter, and in the mornings, we're covering a more basic application. What did Jesus mean right now for us? And in the evenings, we come back and look at it more from a big picture Old Testament point of view. So we encourage you this morning and also tonight, come back so we can hear more about Jesus' parable in depth. So this parable might sound familiar to you because we covered one very similar to this a few weeks ago. Both have to do with vineyards and both have to do with laborers in the vineyard, but Jesus here has a direct application to the people hearing it. So what we want to do, go through the text a little bit, break it down, and pull some application out for us this morning. So the first part here is we see the master and his vineyard. The master and his vineyard. And it's kind of a weird working situation compared to how we work today, because typically most of you probably have an employer. You might have a boss, and you have a workplace that you go into every day. You've been working there a couple years, that kind of thing. But in the first century in Palestine, that wasn't necessarily the case. In fact, most of the workforce back in Jesus' time probably would have been manual laborers. Just think about this. Who were the first disciples that Jesus called? Remember who they were? What did they do for a living? They're a fisherman, right? That's a manual labor. I cast the nets out and I pull them back up. That's a work with your hands kind of job. And most of the population back in Israel was this at this time. The man of the house would go out during the day and he would look for a day job. And that's literally what a denarius was. If you were paid a denarius back in Jesus' time, that meant you were paid for one day of work. So naturally, a master plants a vineyard and he doesn't have a workforce by himself, doesn't have any hired guys yet. So every day, probably, he would go out into the community, into the market, Jesus says, and he would find people who are literally waiting on the streets to be employed. So he goes and finds one, and in the text, it's a little bit confusing, but it says at the first hour, the Hebrew clock worked a little bit different. So for us, in modern times, that would be 6 o'clock in the morning. So early in the morning, he rises and he goes into the marketplace, and he finds some workers to work for a 12-hour shift. In the Jewish clock, 6 to 6 was a one-hour day. So if you think a 10 or 11-hour shift is bad today, you should work out in the field 12 hours. That's how it was back then. So he hires several guys at 6 o'clock in the morning to go work for one day's wage. But as they're working, the master notices something. There's way too much work to be done for just this one group of workers to do. So what does he do? Another hour, he goes back at 9 o'clock in the morning, and he hires even more workers. And as the day is continuing, he realizes there's even more work to be done. So at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, the heat of the day, he goes back in the marketplace, hires even more workers. And do you see a trend here? Then he realizes there's more work to be done. So at 3 o'clock, he goes back into the marketplace at 3 in the afternoon, and he hires even more workers. And then at the very end of the day, at 5 o'clock, which the Jews consider the 11th hour, he goes and hires even more workers because there's more work to be done. So imagine laboring all day, and there's so much work to do in this vineyard that you continually have to go and find more and more help. Now, by a show of hands, how many of you have ever worked this kind of job? Working a garden, picking vegetables? Right, it's not super easy. Would you say it's very easy? Typically, you rise in the morning, right? You'll get up at like 4 or 5 before the sun really starts to beat down on you, and you'll pick those things because it's easier. You don't want to go out 3 o'clock because you'll get scorched to death. So this is what they were doing all day. So if you have a garden, you have a huge garden you're going to be working in all day, would you appreciate some help? Yes, you would. If you're going to be out there all day, of course you appreciate help. You would think that these workers would be glad that the master goes back and finds more workers, right? Because you get more hired hands, you get more help to do the work. But let's see what happens here. The next part of the story that Jesus tells is the master pays them a flat rate. And here's where the story takes a twist. Because what the master says is, bring all my workers at 6 o'clock in the afternoon, bring them all in, and I'm going to pay them each according to what they've done. But here's what happens. He takes the workers that he hired at 5 p.m., 1 hour till close, he brings them up first, and he pays them one full day's wage. He pays them first. Excuse me. So imagine you've been this worker that we've worked for 12 hours today. You've already been out there sweating and you've been in the hot all day. You're watching the master give the one who's worked 1 hour a whole day's wage. What are you thinking? All right, if I'm working, he's being super generous, right? So if one hour of work merits a whole day's worth of pay, I've been working 12 hours. That means I get 12 days worth of pay. Isn't that right? Math is hard, but I think that's kind of how it works, right? But here's the twist. As the master goes down, he pays the 5 o'clock worker a denarius, pays the 3 o'clock worker, guess what? A denarius, pays the 12 o'clock worker a denarius, he pays the 9 o'clock worker a denarius, and finally the 12-hour workers, the ones who've been there since 6 o'clock, he pays them 1 denarius. Now, the basic laws of fairness, if you remember when you were a kid, if you got the same payment, but you did more work, that classically we say, that's not fair, is it? That's not fair. I've been out here all day, and that's exactly what they say. And so the workers kind of turn on their master and say, sir, we've been out here all day. These guys have been working for an hour. Why do they get a full day's worth of pay for 1 hour of work? Here's where the application comes in. The master has to defend his actions against his hired workers. Now, just think about that for a minute. This master is someone who has means. If you had land and you had the means to plant your own garden, you were a wealthy guy, probably someone of status. And here you've got manual laborers, people who were hired literally off the street, questioning your integrity, questioning your motives. And here's what Jesus, here's where he kind of brings it home here. By the way, this is a denarius. This is Augustus Caesar. Just like we have our coins today with George Washington on the face of our quarter, they also used to print their rulers on the face of their money. This is the emperor who would have been alive when Jesus was born. So Augustus Caesar. Here's what the master says. He reminds them of the deal that they made. Look back at verse 13. Matthew 20 and verse 13. Let's read that again. But he replied to one of them, friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for denarius? He reminds them, as I went 5 times out in the community and found people to work, every single person I made a deal with, I said, you will receive a denarius for your work. Doesn't matter if it's 12 hours, doesn't matter if it's 9, doesn't matter if it's 6, 3, 1, and so on and so forth. Everyone that he made a deal with, he said, you will get 1 day's worth of pay. So he's revealing something about the mindset of these workers. They have forgotten the original deal that they have made with them. Because if they remembered, it wouldn't have been a problem. Oh yeah, I remember that he said he was going to do that. That's fine. During the day of work, they have forgotten what they were supposed to be doing. In verse 14, let's read that again. He reminds them of their fellow workers. Verse 14, take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give this last worker as I give to you. Think about this worker who maybe was at the 5th hour, the 11th hour, as the Bible says. Why is he working in the first place? That's a good question for all of us. Why do you have a job in the first place? Because you really like working? You like being in an office all day and you love to do doing that work for somebody else? No. Why are you working? Feed your family. Pay your mortgage. Isn't that right? I think it's safe to say if most of us didn't have to do those things, we wouldn't be working, would we? I'd be doing whatever I want to do. That's what the master says here. He says, you really want me to send the last worker I hired away with not enough money to feed his family? That's really what you want to do here? Remember the Sermon on the Mount when Jesus says, give us this day our daily bread? You know why he said that? Because back in this time, you didn't receive a steady paycheck. You didn't receive government benefits. There was no stimulus check for people living in the first century. Literally, if you wanted to eat, guess what you had to go do? You had to go work. Had to put your hands in something. So Jesus says, give us this day our daily bread. Every single day, if the husband didn't work, maybe you didn't have money. Hopefully you had your savings. That's why it was so bad for widows back in this time, because they really couldn't go out and do these kind of jobs. It wasn't acceptable for them to do it. So give us this day our daily bread. The master says, you want me to send this man home with less than what he needs to feed his family? But it's not done. Look at verse 15 as well. Finally, he reminds them who is really in charge of this operation. Verse 15, let's read that again. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or do you begrudge my generosity? Literally, as Jerry read for us today, the King James and other translations say, is your eye evil because I am generous? What is the master saying here about the other workers? He's saying, you are jealous. You're wishing that you were the one at the fifth hour that only had to work 1 hour. It's not enough for you only to get the denarius. You want even more than what we agreed to. And the master has to sit them down and say, I'm sorry, whose money is this? Whose vineyard are you working in? Oh, yeah, I'm the master. Oh, yeah, it's my vineyard, and I planted this. And if you're wondering about an application, probably you're forming it in your head already, but the application for us today is, whose church is this? Whose vineyard have we been employed in? Is it yours? Is it mine? When the Lord comes back, is he going to say, Alan, I'm restoring your church to you. Here she comes as a bride to you. No. In the Bible, the vineyard is the Lord's. The church is the Lord's. But is it not true that sometimes as Christians, those of us who've been working, we've been toiling away, we're sweaty and we're hot, and we want what's coming to us, is it not true that sometimes we sit back and we kind of begrudge those who come in later? Might be different. Might not work the same as us. Is that true? How many of you have ever heard the, common situation, someone's on their deathbed. They've been an awful person their whole life, and they've been a known sinner their whole life, whatever the situation is. And at the 11th hour, they call for someone to baptize them. Right? Don't pretend like you haven't heard this. I know you've heard this. And what's the idea? What's the idea? We say, me, I've been a Christian my whole life. Really? You think you can live a life of sin, you can just do what you want to, and then when you need the Lord, all of a sudden you can just call him in your life? You really think that's how it works? According to what Jesus says, yeah. Yeah, that's how it works. And as he tells his workers, do you not think I can do what I want with my own money? Who makes the rules? Do I make the rules? Or does God make the rules? I'll tell you this. I was baptized when I was 12 years old. And it was a typical baptism thing. Like, I went to church all my life, and I knew what to do. And it was only a matter of time. That was what was implied about it. You know, someday, son, you'll become a Christian, that kind of thing. My papaw was 65, I think, maybe early 60s. And he had gone to church all his life, and he was in the church a lot, but he was not himself a Christian. Never pulled the trigger. And I was convinced, I was certain, that when I became a Christian at 12, he would follow suit. I was convinced. I was just, that was what was going to happen that day. Wednesday night, got baptized, and Papaw hugged me, and that was it. Proud of you, son, and that was it. Waited about 5 years, I was in high school, and my sister gets baptized, because again, that's what you do when you're in the church, only a matter of time, young lady, before you'll become a Christian. So she decides to pull the trigger, and guess who decides to become a Christian with her? My papaw. I would be lying to you if I said there wasn't a little bit of me inside that says that's not fair, right? I made this commitment, and you loved me, so why did you wait until my sister got baptized? So here's the weird reality of our situation and really how salvation works. I am an older Christian than my papaw. Isn't that weird? If you were to compare his faith, the amount of time he's been a Christian, and mine, we're different ages. But I'll tell you something right now. My papaw is a workhorse. And what my papaw has been able to accomplish since he's been a Christian compared to what I've done, it dwarfs me. My papaw helped plant a church in our community. He became one of the first elders in that church. He is still an elder in his late 70s, and he's working twice as hard as I am. It does not matter when the person comes into the workforce. It matters the arrangement they made with the master and how hard they are willing to work. And I'm happy to say that when my time comes, when the Lord comes back, me and my papaw and everyone who came after us are going to receive the same reward. Isn't that a good feeling? Isn't that better than at the day of judgment saying, "But Lord, I became a minister. Come on, man. Can I get the good seat, like, next to you?" And Pablo gets, like, the one in the back with the air conditioner. Like, is there a way we can work this out? Is there something we can do? No. That's not how grace works. That's not how any of this works. And so Jesus closes out his lesson this way. Look at verse 16. He says, "So the last will be first, and the first will be last." Disciples had a hard time with this. Disciples really had a hard time with this. And you can imagine why. They were special. They were chosen. Jesus handpicked them to be his understudies. But they still had a problem with that. Because literally in the next section of Scripture, you see what that title says? Mine says, "A Mother's Request." The sons of Zebedee, James and John, come to Jesus. In other situations, his mom does it here. But they say, "Lord, make us one to sit at your right hand and one to sit at your left hand in your kingdom." And Jesus says, "I don't think you know what you're talking about. I don't think you understand how this whole grace thing works." And what's his answer? He says, "All right, I see you're ambitious. I see you want to get ahead. How's that going to work?" Look down at the end of that section, verse 26. "It shall not be so among you, but what? Whoever would be great among you must be your servant. Whoever would be first among you must be your slave. Even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." What is the answer for us today? What is the answer? How do we get ahead in this vineyard that God's planted? God says, "Pave the way for more workers." Again, imagine that idea that you're working in a garden by yourself. It's hot, you're sweaty, you're ready to go inside. Are you mad that somebody joins you to help you? Why would you be mad about that? Thank you for helping me. Should we be mad in the church when new workers come in? What if they don't sound like me? What if they're a different color than me? What if they smell weird? What if they've been this place or that place? What if they've done this, that, or the other? Doesn't matter. Why? Because God's in charge here. He said, "I found them unemployed. I employed them. I'm willing to give them the same wage that we agreed on." Shouldn't it make us happy? Shouldn't we be grateful that God's willing to have mercy on us? What God says to us today, if we want to be great in this vineyard, put yourself at the end of the line. The first will be last. The last will be first. It's what Jesus, his whole ministry was about. Where are you working in the vineyard this morning? Are you struggling to get ahead? Are you trying to outdo everybody else? Are you begrudging those from the world who are coming into the church? Are they not good enough for you? Are you pretending that you own the wages, that you own the vineyard? If that is you this morning, repent. Because when the master comes to you, he's going to tell you the exact same thing. "I agreed one day's wage, that's what you're going to get. Nothing more." We should be grateful for that. If you are someone who is not in the workforce already, and you see this vineyard, there's work to do. As Jesus said in John 4, the fields are white for harvest. We got to go and do this stuff. If you see there is work to be done, become a Christian. Become a worker in God's vineyard. Be paid an extremely generous wage. That is his destiny for you. It's his grace to you. If the church can serve you anyway this morning, come forward right now as you sing the song of invitation.